The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Let me tell you about who deserves a shot at the United States heavyweight.
Let's hear it.
I'm the champion. I ought to know. You know, I've been sizing up guys since I came to WCW. And I think the one guy that stands out the most, the guy that I think has earned a title shot, El Dandy, I think you're a heck of a wrestler, you're a great technician in the ring, and you're a jam-up guy. Whoa. I don't see any reason...
Wait a minute. El Dandy has been wrestling in the cruiserweight division here. Please.
He's a great wrestler.
He's a great wrestler, but my goodness sakes, it's 50 pounds
different. Who are you to doubt El Dandy? Because this guy's a serious professional.
Well, let's talk about some serious contenders.
How about hypnosis? Let's get thrown...
Psychosis? Psychosis?
Whatever. He's a great wrestler, you know...
Hello, and welcome to episode 177 of the WrestleCast. I'm your host, Don DeLaRente, and I'm joined by my SmackDown Matters correspondent, Miss Stevie Jodin.
Hey, friend.
Hey, friend. How are you?
It's wonderful. Had a snow day today.
Snow days are the best.
Even at my age, they are still the best thing to ever happen to me.
Yes, because as an adult, a snow day is a valid excuse not to get out of your sleeping clothes or your pajamas.
It me.
So, yes, I enjoy snow days as well. Don't get enough of them here in North Carolina, but when we do, I take full advantage. And we're joined tonight by a first-time guest on the WrestleCast. He is a member of the hashtag RawCast, hashtag SmackDown Matters Live Tweets. He's Mr. McKenzie. What's going on, McKenzie?
Not much. How you guys doing tonight?
We're good. We're good. Glad that you could join us.
I appreciate the invite.
Let everybody know how they can follow you on Twitter.
On Twitter, it's at Spuds McKenzie. That's SpudzMacKensy. Don't follow me if you're a faint at heart. I'm a little rude, so, you know. But for the most part, I try to keep it civil. But some days it works out better than others, you know?
Yeah, know how it goes. Know how it goes. So, as all first-time guests on the WrestleCast have to do, have to give us a little bit of background. Or, a.k.a., your origin story on professional wrestling. Who got you into watching wrestling? What did you grow up watching? And some of your favorites.
Been a wrestling fan my entire life. My mom's father, so my grandfather, was a big wrestling fan. So I've been watching literally my entire life. Being I'm from around the Louisville, Kentucky area, I've gotten, you know, blessed to see a lot of good wrestling over the time, especially with the Danny Davis School of Wrestling being in my hometown, Jeffersonville, Indiana. So over the time, I mean, there's a plethora. My favorite of all time is Bret Hart, excellence of execution. Other than that, The Rock, I love The Rock. I quote him quite often in real life and people look at me real crazy, but you know, some people get me, some people don't. It is what it is. But, just really, kind of fell off for a little bit after the Attitude Era, but kind of picked back up here in the last few years. So, trying to get a lot more into the live events and such. Recently just went to Fastlane. So that was pretty, impromptu but fun. It was good to have the energy of the crowd, so yeah, just kind of keep it moving from there.
Okay, so what do you think about a pay-per-view event, live event? How do you feel about attending that?
It was good. It wasn't my first. Back in the day, I went to a couple of the In Your Houses that came through. As far as this one goes, the crowd was a lot better than I expected. I expected a little less than I didn't actually think Columbus would sell out. Last time I remember attending an event in Columbus, it was probably only about two-thirds packed, so but they showed up and showed out for real. It was a nice crowd. Cena held everyone's attention. That was pretty much the main chant all night. Great match with Nakamura and Rusev. I think that was probably the highlight for me. I really enjoyed that one. And as always, getting to yell at AWOL Orton. Can't stand that man, but he put on a great match that night.
You are really trying to endure yourself to Dee Jonet tonight, aren't you?
Oh, no, you're not an Orton fan either?
You know, I don't see it for all lives at all.
Oh, no. Hashtag not my U.S. champion.
I live.
So, again, McKenzie, we're glad that you could join us tonight and help us talk a little bit of wrestling here on the WrestleCast.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Let's get it going.
All right. So, we got some news, of course. We're going to start off with Bobby Fish, one half of the NXT Tag Team Champions, suffered partial tears to his ACL and MCL. Yeah. And he's expected to miss 5 to 6 months. Worst time to get injured, right here before the WrestleMania season. You know, where all the big matches and big paydays and everything get lined up for the guys. So I don't know what this is going to do for, you know, Undisputed Era, if they're going to be able to, you know, they probably won't be able to work around the 30-day clause of defending the championships. So it looks like Kyle O'Reilly might be going in alone for a little while, or maybe Adam Cole will step in and they just kind of take over the tag team belts that way. So I don't know.
Oh, so that makes sense. I was wondering why he came out alone tonight, and I hadn't seen that before. Actually, you just said that, so it makes sense. Me watching his match tonight while he didn't have the guys with him, but yeah, that's unfortunate.
Yeah, man, it sucks. Red Dragon, Bobby Fish, and Kyle O'Reilly, they're like my second favorite tag team right now in pro wrestling, so it sucks that I won't be able to see those guys at a takeover on the Mania stage, because I know they would have had a chance to really light it up. So hopefully good recovery and a fast recovery for Bobby Fish. Mark Henry, he will be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame at this year's WrestleMania. So DD Jonay, mm-hmm. Get your thoughts first and foremost on Cecil Chocolate.
He deserves.
Yes, he really does.
I just hope that, you know, the hand isn't there. I would like to forget that ever happened. But yeah, he's earned it. One of the great things to come out of it, though, was they showed a clip of when he, like, fake retired that one time.
Oh, yeah.
And it ended with him doing some move on John Cena. And I was like, ooh, makes my heart smile.
Mackenzie, your thoughts on Mark Henry?
Much, you know what I'm saying, deserved for the old Sealsby, Texas boy. Always enjoyed it, especially when he had that run with the Nation. They had one of the top two, three stables of all time with them. So much deserved. Can't wait to see it. Look forward to his speech. And yeah, I agree with the hand. That wasn't the best for interracial relations in America. So yeah.
It was like a May December thing too. It was just, it was all bad.
Yeah, yeah. You know, we can forget some of the things, but overall, great career.
Some interesting facts about Mark Henry. Mark Henry was the first ever developmental athlete signed to the WWE. He's also the first ever wrestler in the WWE/WWF to have a guaranteed contract.
Hey.
He signed a 10-year contract fresh off the Olympics and actually not being able to compete in the Olympics because he hurt his knee. So, you know, and also when The Rock almost quit, Mark Henry was the one who told him to stick it out.
Aw, black people sticking together.
Yeah, yeah. So Mark Henry also was the one who talked the company into letting Neville turn heel.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
He's smart.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw you tweet that the other day. I didn't know that either.
Yeah. Yeah,
so does he work for them?
Yes.
Like, does he work
is,
in the back?
Yes, he's backstage now. He's like a talent scout and just kind of being like an agent, or, you know, just around helping guys out, put together matches, helping creative, just kind of being a all-around good guy, good worker, like he's always been.
Cool.
Yeah, so definitely deserve it.
One of the great things, too, I remember when he first came, because he was one of them that was developed down here in Jeffersonville with Danny Davis. And I just remember seeing him as a kid and just like, Jesus, that guy was huge. But yeah, they put in a lot of work with him and it definitely paid off.
Yeah, he said that he got in trouble. Something happened and he got sent down there as like punishment or something, where he was so awful that they sent him down there as punishment. And he was like, that's actually the best thing that ever happened to him, because he got a chance to make mistakes and not be in the glare. And, you know, learn or whatever. And so, yeah, he credits OVW with a lot of, you know, helping him, you know, mature and get where he was when he got back up there the second time around. So, good for Mark Henry. And last but not least, WWE decided they wanted to break the internet on Tuesday. So, around, I guess, 2:30, they announced that Daniel Bryan, after 3 years out of the ring, has been medically cleared to wrestle again.
Hey.
This is like a WrestleMania miracle. I don't think anybody, this might even be a bigger shot than Shawn Michaels coming out of retirement, when he came out of retirement after the back injury after 6 years. And everybody was like, well, if he hadn't done it now, he probably won't get a chance to. I think people thought Daniel Bryan was maybe would wrestle again, but he wouldn't wrestle for WWE.
Yeah.
But there's no way they were going to let that money get away from them. That would have been he's too big as far as merchandising and such. At the end of the day, to me, if he was going to wrestle again, there was no choice but to be in WWE. They were going to just push it through because, like I said, he pushes the needle too much.
Well, I mean, he had given every indication that when his contract was up, he was going to be out. And if that meant wrestling on the Indies, going to New Japan, that he was going to go somewhere where he's going to be able to get in the ring. And for over a year and a half, he was telling everybody who would listen, I'm good. This dude said I'm good. This dude said I'm good. I went to this doctor, my doctor that I've always gone to every time I've gotten a concussion, and I wasn't good. He told me I was good, but I don't know what changed and, you know, whatever the specialists were. I guess they got so many guys that, you know, tried to make it a roadblock, and he knocked down each one of the roadblocks that he didn't have any choice but to let him get back in the ring. But whatever happened, it was a miracle, and Daniel Bryan is back.
And that is best for business.
And it actually might be the best thing that ever happened to Roman Reigns.
So people can get over it?
So people can finally get over it. Roman, the whole backlash to Roman Reigns is twofold. One, when the people were ready for Roman, classic WWE, they didn't give it to him and they made him wait. So by the time they got it, they had cooled off. And second, they never got the Daniel Bryan championship run, and the person who got put into the spot right after that was Roman Reigns. And the fans have never, ever, ever been on his side since that moment right there. So maybe Daniel Bryan coming back, working his way back to the championship, can set the stars back up, and Roman can finally, you know, not be so quote-unquote forced down on everybody as they think, and, you know, get him back to where he was, like, 3 years ago. I mean, he really was like where Braun Strowman is right now, where everybody was like, ooh, Roman needs to be the champion. You know who needs to be the champion? Roman, Roman, Roman. But they weren't going that way. Same way that right now, the Rumble's like, you know who needs to be the champion? Braun. I don't want to see Roman and Brock. I want to see Braun and Brock. But by the time we get it, it's going to be like a year from now, and everybody's going to be really cooled off on it. Like, he's the champ. Would have been better if he was the champion last year, but okay, we finally got it.
Yeah, because creative definitely can keep a good storyline going for a year straight. So they'll find a way to mess Braun up somehow.
So that was our news segment. So we're going to roll into Monday Night Raw. Kurt Angle comes out. He opens the show by saying that Roman Reigns is still suspended and that while Brock isn't here, he will be here later tonight. Angle is then interrupted by Roman Reigns coming through the crowd and into the ring. Angle reminds Roman that he's suspended, and Reigns says he doesn't care. Brock comes and goes as he pleases, so he's here to represent the Mania main event.
Boom.
Reigns says he was suspended for telling the truth. Angle tells Reigns to relax and wait because he gets Brock in 3 weeks. Reigns still doesn't give a shit about what Angle has to say, and he's not leaving until he makes another memory here tonight. He wants Brock. Quote unquote, U.S. Marshals arrive to read Reigns his rights. They cuff him, but Reigns says, hey, don't touch me. I'll do what you say. I'll cooperate, but don't touch me. But one of them gets a little too handsy, and Roman starts to fight them off. Brock arrives, and German suplexes Reigns and beats his ass with a chair as Reigns is still handcuffed. More German suplexes follow. Brock teases leaving and then lays in more chair shots and another German suplex. Brock then hits an F5 just to make his point clear. They bring out the stretcher for Reigns. Brock leaves, and then he runs back down the aisle and shoves over Roman on the stretcher. So, Mackenzie, I want to get your thoughts on first Roman coming through the crowd when he was supposed to be suspended. That's one of the coolest things that they've let Roman do in the last year or two. Beating up U.S. Marshals was even cooler. So I'll give him actually a 1 point for Roman Reigns doing something cool this week.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. One of the funniest parts, too, before I get to that, is once Angle was walking out of the ring, I don't know if y'all saw his lips, he just walked out and said, fuck this shit, I'm done. And from that point on, that segment was pretty good because, yeah, from that point after he beat up the cops and Brock comes out, and they actually, you know, it was crazy. It's probably the first time in a very, very long time I've heard the crowd boo Brock. I'm probably saying since he beat No, not since he beat Taker at Mania, but you know, very few and far between. So, for the main part, that definitely gave Roman the help he needed to get a little push for the babyface that they want him to be overall for the company. So, yeah, overall, it was a definite win for Roman in that segment.
All right, Ms. Dee Dee Jonay, your thoughts on the opening segment?
I don't know, man. This is y'all's fault because y'all told me to put the rum in the drink.
That fast?
It don't take much. I'm a lightweight.
Two and a half sheets is currently in the building.
No, I don't know. I felt like Roman could have tried to find the keys a little bit more. That's all I got.
All right. Next up, Alexa Bliss. She's out. She's cutting a promo where she apologizes for what she said about Nia Jax last week. She says that she's sorry that she didn't speak the truth sooner. She doesn't feel bad at all, and she loves humiliating Nia. She never liked Nia. She used her, and she feels just like she just dropped 300 pounds of loser.
You know what would have made that line even better?
What's that?
Has she, whatever weight Nia actually is, like down to the number, like 323, like that would have been even more of a jab. But yeah.
Yeah, then everybody would have been like, why she got to use her real weight? Oh, that's too far.
Oh, please.
You know how sensitive people are these days.
Listen.
They
are ready. Including Nia. We done got her crying on TV. Right. The Samoan sobber. You know what I'm saying? That's crazy.
They already got her in tears. Why not go the extra mile?
You know, a lot of people are already saying this is like, you know, borderline bullying. And, they definitely are, you know, on the edge when it comes to the storyline. A lot of people really aren't really keen on the story or how they're getting to the match, but Alexa Bliss can pull it off because she's very good on the mic and she's, you know, a natural mean girl. So we have the much anticipated Alexa Bliss versus Asuka match, non-title. Bliss hits a code red for two. Bliss then throws a tantrum and hits a neck breaker, but misses the rolling knees, allowing Asuka to make a cover for two. Asuka gets the ankle lock, and Bliss makes the ropes and rolls out to the floor. Mickie James helps Alexa Bliss to her feet, and they leave, causing a countout. After the match, Nia rushes out and takes out Mickie James and then chases Alexa Bliss. Mickie James ends up saving Alexa Bliss. Jax looks like she wants to kill Bliss and chases after her to the back. A little disappointed Nia couldn't catch Alexa when Alexa had a bad ankle, but she did have a head start, and Mickie James did play a good roadblock twice.
I mean, she's going to catch her eventually. It's going to be great.
No, don't tell me you're a Bliss hater. Don't say it.
Hate is a strong word, but our El Dandy guest of the year has been a very bad influence on me, so I do not like Alexa Bliss.
Oh, well, 2 out of 3 so far is not bad, but Bliss Cakes can do no wrong in my eyes, so I feel she probably obviously is going to lose to her at Mania, but it was a good segment, a good part. I was actually very surprised at how quick Nia was on her first step. That was pretty impressive for, you know, the 300 pounds that she dropped, but yeah. Overall, the match, too, I wasn't all too impressed. I'm really glad now that they're doing the Asuka-Charlotte instead of Asuka-Bliss. Originally, I kind of was so-so, but yeah, after watching them, they don't really have the in-ring chemistry to do what needs to be done on the Mania stage. But overall, yeah, that was pretty decent.
So we come back from commercial, and Alexa Bliss complains to Kurt Angle about Nia Jax. He wants her arrested. Or she wants her arrested, excuse me. Angle's like, nah. You said some things out here that were very nasty, and, you know, a lot of millions of young girls, including my daughter, saw what you said. So I'm going to do something that really needs to be done, and I'm going to make a match between you and Nia for the title at WrestleMania. And this is where DeJonay was like, Braun comes out, talks about last week's destruction, and says that they are making him have a tag team partner, which he doesn't think he needs.
He don't.
The Bar arrives and says that he may have won the Battle Royal, but that doesn't mean he can beat the Bar. They don't care who he chooses because he doesn't stand a chance. Braun tells them to shut up and tells them to worry about and don't worry about him and his partner, and that he gets a match with one of them right now. So the match is Braun Strowman versus Cesaro. All right, Dee Dee. Sheamus distracts Braun.
Hey!
And Cesaro goes to the floor, and Braun follows and then takes out Sheamus. Back in the ring, Cesaro lays in uppercuts, but Braun catches him with the power slam for the win. Cesaro is so good. Even in a loss, I was like, damn, he can have a match with the biggest dude on the card. He can have a great match with the smallest dude on the card. High flyers, strong man, don't matter.
When you're talented, when you are the Swiss Superman, this is what you can do.
Hopefully they give him a major title run, U.S. championship, intercontinental title against something, you know, before, you know, gets too late in his career.
Yeah, he definitely deserves it out of a lot of people. He's done a little bit of everything for WWE in his time there. So if anybody, definitely deserves a nice lengthy run with one of the smaller, well, I don't want to call it smaller belts because they're all nice to me, but you know, one of the lesser titles, definitely Cesaro's probably at the top of that list.
We get a video hyping Ultimate Deletion. Senior Benjamin, Rebby, Maxwell, and Wolfgang are all there, and Vanguard 1 is off to scout the compound. We have the Revival versus Titus Worldwide. Apollo hits a high cross on Scott Dawson, who rolls through for a two count. He makes a blind tag to Wilder, and they hit the Shatter Machine, and they get the win. After the match, the Revival ask about their path to Mania. They feel that they are the most qualified for a tag team title shot, and then they announce that they will win the Andre Battle Royal. I just think that the Revival are just too old school wrestling for Vince, and he just doesn't get it.
I don't think I get it either.
You don't like him because of the music.
Yeah. So first impressions. They're better music. I was
about to say, they're disqualified because of the music. But if you remember their NXT matches with, you know, Gargano and Ciampa and Authors of Pain and them, you know they can wrestle really well.
Okay.
just not enough for you, huh?
McKenzie, your thoughts on the Revival and their kind of spot they're in right now?
It's the limbo of the whole tag team division is weird to me because they were doing so well moving it forward. And then I feel like as much as Braun is great, putting him in that position is putting that division two steps back. There's obviously more deserving teams that have been putting in a lot more work, and Revival being one of them. So it's disappointing, but hopefully, you know, after Mania, after things shake out, they'll get that opportunity because tag team wrestling to me is one of the better things growing up. Obviously, a Hart Foundation fan and such. Tag team wrestling was a big staple of WWF at that point, and I feel like they need to get back to that a little more. So,
all right. We had Sasha Banks and Bayley versus Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose. Banks cuts a pre-match promo and says people should talk about their issues face to face. They are best friends and she wants to fix things. Banks just wanted to win the Elimination Chamber, but Bayley wasn't being her friend the past 2 weeks. Banks says that she's a bigger person and forgives Bayley and offers a handshake. Bayley says that she was angry, but she didn't cost them their matches. She can't get over what Banks did to her in the chamber. She gets it, but it's how Banks did what she did. The look and smirk Banks had ate at her. Banks smiled, and she can't get that out of her head. They are supposed to be friends, but why was what she did so easy for her? Then, Absolution interrupts before Sasha could answer. So, Dee Dee, what did you think? You're always good at, adding in, filling in the gaps. The answer was going to be before Absolution came out there?
Wait, what was the question?
Oh, when Bayley asked Sasha why was it so easy for her to knock her off the pod in the Elimination Chamber?
I think she was going to be like, because I want to win. Because here's the thing. Sasha doesn't know she's a heel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Alexis knows that she's a heel. Mm-hmm. She don't care, but she'll pretend she's not if it suits her. Sasha really don't know she's a heel. So when she kicks Bayley down the thing, she's not thinking, I'm scarring you, Mufasa. She's thinking, I just want to win. So, like, I think things are a little twisted in her mind. Maybe because she's from Boston. The air up there is a little different. But I think she's just a little confused.
Okay.
I think. I could be wrong. I'm usually not wrong, though.
Mackenzie, your thoughts on this whole Bayley and Sasha crockpot feud? I mean, it's been slow cooking for like the last 4 months, it seems.
It's been a while. At this point, I want one of them to turn heel, obviously, as we all do. And it's all the signs that they were pointing at on Monday seemed like Bayley. There was a point in that match when Sasha was reaching out for a tag and Bayley didn't even attempt to reach out. But I think it would be better overall if Sasha was the heel, but I don't know. She doesn't seem like she wants to play that role. But I think overall the crowd would be better at, you know, giving her the ability to be a heel than Bayley. But yeah, overall it's just, I'm confused by creative with this one. Like you said, it's slow cooked, so who knows where they're going with this one, but just get it over with already.
And like Dee Dee said, Sasha's natural personality is as a heel, so she would be better equipped to take all of what comes with being a heel, whereas this would be Bayley's first time, and I don't know how, you know, it could turn out to be glorious like Sami Zayn, though. You know, I didn't think Sami Zayn being a heel was going to be all that great, but I love it, so.
But he also has a lot of help from KO, so, you know what I'm saying? KO is one of the best in the business at what he's doing. Bayley trying to be a heel by herself, I mean, can we call her the hugger heel with that? I mean, I don't know. Sasha would be better in that role, but knowing creative, they're going to turn Bayley heel, so.
All right, well, we'll see. Well, let's get to the conclusion of this match. Bayley tags herself in and runs wild on Sonya Deville. Bayley hits a stunner in the ropes, and then a suplex follows. Mandy Rose makes the save, and it breaks down. Bayley has a backslide, but the ref is distracted. Bayley argues with Sasha. Sonya Deville slams Bayley into Sasha, and a super kick finishes off Bayley, and Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose get the win. So we accomplished a lot there. Got a distraction in.
It's going down smooth.
And we going down smooth. Another little chapter in the Sasha and Bayley little thing here where they had the argument because, you know, the ref was distracted because Sasha wouldn't get out of the ring while Bayley had the pinfall. So they're telling a great story. It's just taking so long, you know. So Dee Dee's least favorite part, John Cena comes out.
Pastor Cena talks way too much for my liking.
He claims that everything is bigger in Texas, and last week he challenged The Undertaker, and tonight he wants his answer.
Hey, I got a question. What does Texas have to do with anything?
Cheap pot.
Yeah, cheap pot.
Such an asshole.
The king of it. It's every week, every promo.
But it's like, everything's bigger in Texas, but nothing would be bigger than a reply from the dead man. Like, he can't even, like, bring it together. He's just like, everything's bigger in Texas. And you assholes who like Daigle are like, fuck yeah, it is.
Now that was good right there. Yeah, he should. That's how he should have put that together. And he sure missed it.
Listen, I mean, I know a little bit about a little bit.
We're going to have you start writing next.
Listen, I am available for a fee.
Handsome fee.
A handsome fee.
Lucina says that tonight he wants his answer. He says Taker has been in hiding due to embarrassment. Some think he no longer belongs, but that's ridiculous. As long as there is a WWE, Taker has meaning. Cena pulls the crowd, and they go wild for Taker. But Cena says the answer to his challenge has been silence. That is the biggest mistake Taker has ever made.
Oh my God.
He will go to Mania as a fan if he has to. But for Taker to not get off his ass and give him an answer is disrespectful to both John Cena and the fans. If you're retired, say no, because everybody will understand. But if not, say yes and give the world what they want to see. You're not the god that they made you. You're a man that is a coward. The Undertaker is a coward. Prove me wrong. Give me an answer. Do some of that stupid stuff you do. Give me some lightning. Give me something. You let everybody down. You're not a god. And can barely call yourself a man.
Oh, the black woman in me was so angry. I was like, who are you talking to? Like, first it was like, who are you? Who are you really? Who are you to ask Undertaker anything? Who are you to call him a coward? Who are you to demand a response? Like, oh God, like I've never hated him more than I hated him in that moment. And I hate him frequently. Like, oh, it bothered me in my spirit.
So, Kane arrives, and Cena wants to know if Kane has an answer for him. Kane chokeslams Cena and walks away.
Good. He deserves.
So, I have a question for you. The previews look great. A lot of people have been saying that they're pretty excited about going to see it. What do you think about blockers?
Here's the thing. It actually does look like fun. I don't know if I'm going. I might watch it on Showtime, though.
Okay. McKenzie, John Cena out here again doing his best Keith Sweat, begging for a match.
It's sad for a 16-time champ to have to do this. I mean, it's bad enough Nikki's got him working double shifts. Now he's out here begging for matches. It's crazy. And also it's sad that they had to bring, you know what I'm saying, Glenn Jacobs out here to do what he had to do for all of 3 minutes. He could have been spending that time campaigning. But, you know, it's a cold game out here. Hopefully we get a response sometime soon. Taker can come collect that $3 million check for one match a year, and we all go home happy.
All right. The Miz comes out. He cuts a promo claiming he gets no respect. He's upset he's not on the WrestleMania magazine. He doesn't even get a one-on-one match, and he doesn't even have to be pinned to lose his title. He says he's not the bad guy here, and he runs down Rollins and Balor, calling them Tyler Black and Prince Nevitt, and he says that he will take his respect. Now, this can be played one of two ways. He tanked Prince Devitt and called him Nevitt, so, you know, that was pretty funny. But it's the classic heel that The Miz is. He can be like, I don't even need to know his name to say his name properly. That's how beneath me he is.
And he'd be right saying, no, I'm not going to say that. That's wrong. No, but did anybody else in that point feel like the WWE cut off his promo when they hit the, who came out for that match?
That would be the club, the Balor Club.
That was the Balor Club. But I felt like he wasn't done yet. And then, like, once he butchered, you know, Nevin instead of Devitt, that as soon as that happened, he had a few more things to say, and then all of a sudden their music hit. So maybe I'm wrong in saying that, but it kind of felt like that he wasn't done with that promo yet.
Yeah, they might have hit the wrap-up button on him. So we get the match, the Mr. Rod versus the Balor Club. Carl Anderson hits the Spine Buster on Axel. Balor gets the hot tag. He starts working over Bo Dallas, and then he hits a tope. Miz distracts the ref, allowing Axel to crotch Balor. Miz attacks, but gets ran into Axel, and Balor rolls up the Miz for the win. The Mizdaraj attacks after the match, but Rollins makes the save and hits the curb stomp on the Miz. Rollins tells Balor that he owes him one. Another furthering of the angle. Of course, here lately, you know, Finn Balor has been kind of a thorn in Seth Rollins' side. But actually, Seth Rollins was the one who got one up on him this time by saving him. So I'm glad they changed it up a little bit.
I like when all my people prosper. They have to take turns. That's okay with me.
We get a Ronda Rousey training video with Kurt Angle commenting. It's basically a personality profile on Ronda's path to MMA after the Olympics and how she dealt with losing in UFC. This was really good. WWE is really good at these. They don't do it enough to build characters and help, further stories. But yeah, just show her like training and becoming a real wrestler and showing that she's here to take her lumps and all that stuff and hear her, you know, say her motivations for why she wants to be in wrestling and what drives her and stuff. It was really good. I don't think a lot of people in the Raw cast changed their thoughts on Ronda, but I think a lot of people in wrestling definitely have a better feeling about her after seeing that video package.
I wouldn't know. I didn't watch it.
But the best thing about that package for her is that she's so deficient at speaking on the mic. That's going to be one of the best ways to, get her stories across, unless obviously they get her with Heyman or someone like that. But yeah, that was definitely a good idea on their part to go that route as far as building Ronda up.
Right. So, maybe that'll be the way that they do this. I know she's probably going to make one more live appearance, but maybe that'll be the go home episode and they can, have like a part two to this or something next week to kind of further it along. Then we got our main event of the evening, the ultimate deletion between Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt. So Bray Wyatt makes his way to the Hardy compound. All the characters are there. Dee Dee, you know how we go up for Rebby, right? You know, I tweeted out. I said, if they're going to do this, they got to have Rebby on the piano, right?
Yeah, did not that you love her, yes.
Did you notice that when Bray Wyatt was walking up to the gate that she was playing his theme song on the piano?
No.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah, good shit, good shit. So
I did notice was they have a new baby.
Yes.
And that was adorable.
Yes.
Because I have this image that they're going to be like the Hardy Boys in about 15 years.
2.0. Cause you know,
yeah.
So they head to the Lake of Reincarnation as Matt asks Skarsgård for help. Bray grabs Vanguard 1 and shoves him away. Senior Benjamin is here underneath Skarsgård, and he tosses a globe into Bray's hand. Brother Nero appears. They start to sing, "He's got the whole world in his hand." So then Matt attacks Bray, hits the Twist of Fate into Skarsgård 1, and he gets the pin. Bray says, "It's not over," and Matt shoves Bray into the Lake of Reincarnation. Matt then sends Senior Benjamin in to retrieve Bray's body. But Senior Benjamin says, Bray is not there. So Matt is happy and declares the Great War is over and says that Bray Wyatt has been deleted. And that's how we ended Monday Night Raw. Now, some inside that I found. The people in the arena, they didn't get to see this.
No, they didn't.
At all?
Nope. They got to see, like, Braun Strowman and Elias.
I would have rather seen Elias personally, but I understand why they would be disappointed.
So, yeah, they never saw any of this.
That's messed up.
Yeah, that's, I mean, especially as long as they've built up this for the past, two, three weeks, and then they didn't even show it on the Jumbotron in the arena?
Nope. So, have you seen Ultimate Deletion, the TNA version, Mackenzie?
After the match, I end up looking up some of the videos because I would just, the Lake and Reincarnation and things like that. I was live tweeting Raw with a friend of mine, and he was, you know, telling me about that because it all, after looking at it, made sense, but, you know, he kind of pieced it together. But before that night, no, I had not. The whole broken gimmick and all that, all of it's new to me.
Okay. So, Dee Dee Jonet, what do you think of the WWF version or WWE version of the Ultimate Deletion?
It was not as good as TNA. I feel like TNA leaned into the fact that this shit didn't make no sense and were real cool with it anyway. And I feel like WWE tries to do like tricky editing and like videotaping and all this to try to make it a thing, and it's like, just let it be what it is. Just let it be a bootleg, weird-ass fight. Like, let Vanguard 1 take control. You just mind your business.
Yeah, because the part where they were in the, what was it? When he was hiding behind all the little statues, that was real extra to me. And he got Bray chasing around, smacking it with the kendo stick. Just like, what is going on? Is this a bad WWE movie? Because I make a lot of those, but this shouldn't be one of those. But yeah, I need to go back and look at all of that from the original TNA, because the whole Woken gimmick is pretty well broken, really. But it seems like a pretty good thing that he's built into his career. So
the TNA angle had, like Dee Dee was saying, it had a lot of campiness into it, and they definitely played it up. And you know, like you said, Dee Dee, WWE tried to just be too serious with it and make it, you know, where it's not meant really to be that serious. It's meant to be wink, wink, nod, nod, you know?
And right. It felt like, with y'all talking about that way, like, to build up during Monday Night Raw, they had all the little funny, like, Matt with the camel, or I'm sorry, yeah, was it a camel?
Yep.
Matt with the camel or giraffe and all that, like, the way y'all explained it to me, it seems like they were building it up nice, but once they got to the match, they went all WWE production on it, which was so-so. But
yeah, because
it wasn't as bad as I thought it'd be.
TNA had like run-ins and cameos and all these different little things to kind of add into it, where Yeah, this one was kind of really light on that. So, but you know, it was a lot better than the House of Horrors. It was a lot better than New Day versus the Wyatts and the Wyatt compound or whatever that was. So, you know, I'll definitely give them a thumbs up on the attempt. You know, it's not going to be better than the original, but not many sequels are. So,
well, it's very true.
And that was your Monday Night Raw for this week. And our Raw was from Dallas as well as SmackDown Matters. So at this time, we'll turn it over to our SmackDown Matters correspondent, Miss Didi Jonet.
Oh my God. Hi, you guys.
Hi, Didi. Are you still with us?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. What was your drink of choice? What was the name of your brand of rum tonight?
The chairman gave me Ray and Nephew.
Okay. Has it warmed you? Are you nice and warm on the inside now?
I am.
Yeah. I was going to say, I am, so she has to be.
So this should be great. A very good SmackDown Matters review.
I'm not that bad. I mean, I guess. Sometimes things don't make sense, but we'll see. So they're in Dallas. Tejas is where they're at. Daniel Bryan comes out, like Don mentioned earlier. He's cleared to wrestle, so he comes out to the biggest chance since ever. And the announcers give him a standing ovation. He says he's got things to talk about, namely Sammy and Kevin, but they're not here, so he'll talk about something else. He talks about how he was depressed, having to retire, blah, blah, blah. He basically puts Brie over in a way that nobody else could have, in a way that nobody else probably ever anticipated, but because Brie was such a great wife and so supportive, and also encouraged him to be grateful that, you know, he can still walk into all these things, but fight for your dream. See the other specialist. You get a good review, go see another specialist. You see another review, go see another specialist. So all this culminates in a thank you, Brie chant, because Brie was a useful Bella.
I always knew Brie was the best Bella twin.
I told you, people. I mean, but it's like a race to the bottom, you know? But
yeah, because the real question is why do their men not want to be around? John's working double shifts. Daniel's been trying to get back in wrestling for 2 years. What's wrong with these women?
Listen, I think Daniel loves wrestling more than he loves his wife, but still loves his wife very, very much. Now, Don and Nikki, I don't know what that shit's about. That shit's just weird.
Yeah, she should have stayed with Dolph, but we digress.
Like, I understand she want money, but he seemed like a lot of work. He got a nice ass, though, so maybe it's that booty.
The Boston booty?
Listen, it's round.
Silly.
It's got to be something. Okay, so blah, 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 blah. He says, every hard thing seems impossible until it becomes real. He said he asked them to take another look at his case, and so they sent him to their own specialist, and they all said the same thing. You are clear. He thanks the WWE and their doctors because they looked at him as a person, not a wrestler. He thanks them for giving the case a second look and not letting that first word be the last word. He says he thanks Brie again, saying no one could understand how much she supported him and he is forever grateful. But time to move on to the fun stuff. He doesn't know where or when he would return, and people point to the WrestleMania sign because duh. And he looks and he's like, is that a good idea? Yes, chance breakout. He says he's not sure if that's going to happen, but he is going to return to the ring. And then they play his music out and it's beautiful. Everybody's happy. After the break, he tells somebody in the back by the name of Charles Robinson, I don't know who that is,
Little Nate. That's the referee. Who? That's Little Nate, the referee with the blonde hair.
Oh, with the blonde hair, with the white blonde hair.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. I didn't know his name. He doesn't look like a Charles. He looks like a Peter. But yeah, he tells him to tell him, Daniel, whenever Kevin and Sammy arrive. Ziggles approaches him and says, congratulations, and I can't wait to beat you. Daniel's like, great, you can certainly try. Next is Shinsuke versus Rusev with Aiden English at ringside. AJ's at commentary. They call the Mania match 20 years in the making. Rusev has control after the break. Nakamura comes back with a flying kick, some strikes, and a kick to the chest and face. Rusev slips out of a Kinshasa attempt and hits a kick to the head for a near fall. They trade kicks, and then Nakamura catches him with a flying armbar. After a few more counters, Nakamura rolls up Rusev for the pinfall win. Aiden almost immediately attacks Nakamura from behind. English and Rusev put the boots to the boy, and AJ slowly, super slowly, acts like he's going to help.
He stands up slowly. He looks to the crowd. He takes off his vest slowly. It's like moving through molasses. It ends up being that Nakamura doesn't need him. He makes his own comeback, takes out both guys. And then when he's done, he smiles and bows at AJ in his like drunken Kung Fu master way. And AJ's just looking kind of like put out that he wasn't needed. So yeah. Thoughts?
Good twist from last week's angle where Nakamura took his time, but still made it in there in time to help AJ. And this week it was like, no, he really don't need you, AJ.
I was like, don't need your assistance. Okay, so next, Asuka gets a video package. Natty Bo approaches Charlotte backstage and accuses her of being scared. She said, no, I'm excited for my greatest challenge. She said, bitch, I'm a greater challenge than both of y'all. I mean, I'm extrapolating. She said Asuka stole her WrestleMania moment and she's only undefeated because they haven't had a match yet. Natty knows that Charlotte can't beat Asuka. Charlotte's like, girl, we got a match tonight. Natty's happy. And that's that. And so later, Nakamura approaches AJ backstage and tells him that he didn't need him tonight. And he was like, yeah, I know, I was out there. And Nakamura's about to say something. And he's like, you're going to beat me at WrestleMania, right? And Nakamura, icon that he is, says, you should have more confidence. Then he tells AJ he's going to beat him with Anita's face. It's hilarious.
Why haven't they come out with the Need a Face t-shirt yet? It's they been slow. Like 6 weeks since they first said it.
Slow.
They do the t-shirt like they're doing the Sasha and Bayley angle.
God. Well, they did the Braun Strowman get these hand shirts pretty quick. I figured that they, you know, were on a new trend.
Especially well, with him being, you know what I'm saying, one of the, I assume, well, I don't know how they do match orders anymore, but they, it should be second to last match, I assume, but building them up, yeah, definitely would be one of their biggest sellers going into New Orleans, but, you know, that's how they do things sometimes.
Boop, boop, boop. Okay, so Baron Corbin has a match against Ty Dillinger, the Perfect Ten. Near the end of the match, Ty comes off the top and Corbin catches him, goes for an end of days, but something goes wrong, so they had to stop what they're doing. He gets held in the front face lock, and then he tosses him into the ring. Once he's in the ring, he hits the end of days again for the win. Ba-ba-ba. So that's that. They're doing a count on how many matches Ty Dillinger has had since last September. At number... Oh, do you want to guess?
Oh, yeah, let's make it a game.
Let's make it a game.
Since September. He hasn't really been on TV that much. Couple of pre-show matches.
I was going to say, the pre-show matches count?
Yeah, it, apparently it doesn't count.
I say like eight.
Okay.
Eight? What do you say?
I was going to say, God, it's barely. So I'd say I was going to go with around eight. So I'll just go 11 to go over.
You said 11?
Uh-huh.
Okay, Price is Right rules, you lose. The answer is 9.
Oh, it was almost a perfect 10.
Almost a perfect 10. Oh. Ooh, another quick game. Another quick game. How many of those 9 involved Baron Corbin?
7.
Donald?
I'll go with 4.
4. Okay, Price is Right rules, you lose again. The answer is 6.
Yeah, I'm 1 over.
Price is Right, you can't go over at all.
I know.
Sorry. Wah.
I think that was my greatest accomplishment at Fastlane, though, because I am the worst Baron Corbin fan, so getting my whole section to cheer Baron Boring was probably the accomplishment I had. That guy is dry as a box of rock. I mean, he is...
I think he's not meant to have charisma. I think he's supposed to be a charisma suck.
But you can't probably be the lone wolf and not have charisma. If you're going to play the role of your own guy, you got to have some charisma.
I mean, he clearly is his own guy, or else he would get his hair cut.
He should. He's balding already. It's terrible.
It's on Stevie Wonder status. And even Stevie Wonder made it to 50 before his hairline like abandoned him.
And and also, maybe y'all can explain to me this. Why was his U.S. title run so short? Like, other than he's boring as hell.
I think that's why.
Okay, so.
I mean, I could be wrong, but I don't know.
I don't have any insider information for you, so yeah, I just think that.
Oh, well, personal opinion, cut it short. Cut the losses while they could.
Yep.
In my head, there was a distraction, so I had to take a drink. Auntie,
Well, look, I'll cheers to that one, too.
And now my drink's all gone. Aww. Any hoodle. Next match was Natty versus Charlotte. CJ comes to the top and Natty grabs her and hits a spinning sit-out powerbomb for a near fall. Would have been the end of the match, but Natty could not cover her quickly enough. Then she applies the sharpshooter. She goes for a rope break. Natty follows with a discus clothesline for two. Charlotte goes for the figure eight for the second time, but Natty kicks her out of the ring. Charlotte spears Natty on the outside and applies the figure four back in the ring. They rolled toward the ropes, which resulted in Charlotte using the move while hanging from the apron, which, like, really hurt your leg, allegedly. I like it, though. Charlotte goes to the top. It takes too long. Natty cuts her off and hits her with a superplex. Carmella runs down like she's about to, like, cash in, and it's like, no, don't be barren. Don't do it. Reconsider. But even though she has given the briefcase to the referee has not hit the bell. And so before it's official, Charlotte hits her with the big boot and essentially kicks her out of the ring. And then Natty rolls up Charlotte and gets the win. And that's it.
I loved it. I love these fake cash-ins, these almost cash-ins for Carmella. Oh, man. Because, like, Charlotte and Natty got a lot of time, and the crowd really wasn't into it except for, like, really towards the end. But once Carmella ran out, man, everybody got up and everybody was into it. So I'm here for it.
Yeah, like, my first thought was, ooh, no, don't do, no. But, you know, it gets her to do something because it's not like she has matches, and it makes everything a little bit more interesting, so that's cool.
Yeah, because, like, you know, whew, I saw something. Somebody was like, Asuka beat Charlotte, and they have, like, a knockdown, drag out, like, you know, last woman barely standing match. Mm-hmm. Asuka's all exhausted, and then Carmella comes out there, does, like, one move, and beats Asuka Street and gets a belt. Boy, you
talking about. I would hate that.
But I was like, no, I don't think WWE books for that type of heat.
I would rather Charlotte beat Asuka Street, and then that happens with Carmella. Because that I could see. But she can't. I can't have Carmella beat in the Street. That's just unacceptable.
That's very unacceptable. And I feel like the way y'all both just broke that down would be exactly right. If Charlotte won that match, it would be more likely if she cashed in, she would actually win. But if Asuka won that match at Mania and she tries to cash in, there's no way they would. I mean, I don't think they would. They've surprised us all before, I'm sure. I never thought I'd see Nia Jax crying on screen. So anything could happen. But I also think in that match, too, and to your point, Don, that it was, the crowd was so not into it that I feel like it might have been just the off-the-cuff thing to have her run down there and do the fake, because then the crowd actually got into it, which, I love Natty and Charlotte matches, me personally, so I was entertained the whole time, but, you know, the crowd, they're wishy-washy at some places, but yeah, I feel like it almost was off-the-cuff to let her run out there and try to act like she was going to cash in for a little more interest in that segment.
Right. Yeah, definitely livened it up.
Livened.
I got between lively and livened.
What you been drinking?
That's what I was about to say.
Voodoo Ranger IPA. Ooh. Yeah. So
there's a beer. It's like not really a beer. It's like a malt. Mm-hmm. But it's made. It's called Steel. I think it tastes like fruit. If you put a little Ciroc in that, ooh.
That sounds dangerous.
Ooh. It's so good. Again, Chairman, he's always around for my bad liquor decisions. We had it at a comedy club. It might actually not have been Courtney, but he was there. Oh, it was so good. Okay. Anti-Hoodle. Harper, so Luke, had a match against Jimmy Uso.
But they had a real good promo before that, though.
Yeah, I'm gonna get there. Oh, you might have to add in details. But
oh, okay.
I'm gonna get there. So they told the Bludgeon Brothers that they aren't afraid and would continue to do whatever it took to remain champions. You can extrapolate. That's all Myers says.
Oh, they said that they're still here. They said they put a beating on Jay, but he's still here. They're still holding down the tag division. They don't know how to back down, but they know how to do is survive and be the best. And they won't stand down, and said they're ready to go to war and get to Mania, and welcome to the Usos Penitentiary.
Yay. Clink, clink. Jimmy goes for a dive, but Eric jumps on the apron to stop him. The distraction allows Jay to give Harper a super kick, and Jimmy gives him another one for a near fall. Unfortunately, almost immediately after that, Harper nails him with a discus clothesline for the win. Aww. Jinder comes out for a promo. He calls the fans hypocrites for booing him. He said he could be doing anything else with his millions of dollars. He got oil money, you think? Yeah. And could be the biggest star.
That's racist. He's Indian. He's Indian.
He's not even
the Saudi Arabian. I know he's not that, but like, where his money come from?
He got that rug money, girl. That
he might have had an Arab cousin. You don't know that line. Anyway, he said he could be doing anything else with his millions of dollars and could be the biggest star in Bollywood with his physique. He claims he brought prestige back to the WWE Championship and made SmackDown the premier show. Wait a minute, bitch. That would be me. He said the fans should worship him, and Bobby interrupts in his glorious manner. Bobby said the only thing he deserved was getting beat so Rude could win back the U.S. title. Rude was about to call it glorious, but all lives interrupts. He tells Jinder to shut up. He said people don't respect Jinder and don't ever mention his name when discussing the greatest champions ever, because without his little stooge, he sucks. I mean, without racism, you're not that great either, my dude, but okay. Jinder amps up like he was ready to fight, but instead he pushes Sunil in his place and bails. Orton gives Sunil a draping DDT, sets up for an RKO, but Rude jumps in and gives Sunil a glorious DDT instead. He goes for a DDT on Orton. Orton counters and he goes for an RKO, and Rude counters that too, because he's glorious. They stare each other down as Jinder watches, and the crowd is all about all lives, because of course they are in Texas.
I love me some Jinder Mahal, man. He makes everything so much better. That's when SmackDown started to fall off, when he lost the belt and it wasn't centered around him. I love when he comes out there and tells the Magna people about themselves.
They need a dedicated heel, especially in times of 45. You need somebody who can call it as it is.
Yeah.
And he could be like back in the day, like Sheik was, like, you know what I'm saying? I'm missing dude's name and I can't think right now because I didn't drink too much. I won't think of it, but I mean, just if WWE would allow it, that would be the greatest thing. Letting Jinder run out there on a promo and be like, Orton, you're the U.S. champion, but you went AWOL? Oh my God, I would have such a great thrill with that one.
I would never let it go. Ever.
Oh, no. No, ever. No. And you know, I think the only person.
You say to me, I'd be like, didn't you go AWOL?
Yeah, I'm going to put that on a sign when they come for SmackDown in Louisville here soon. Hopefully they don't try to kick me out for that or not let me take it in. If he's U.S. champ, of course.
You ever see somebody get a tattoo and they be like, it's so nice. And you'd be like, bitch, it's lopsided.
no regrets.
I'm sorry. I tend to watch other things while we record, and I happen to be watching Black Ink Crew. No shade.
Oh, who was doing the tattoo?
No, I'm not going to do all that.
Oh.
No.
We all know it's between Oh Shit and Donna.
It wasn't either one of them. Donna's tattoos are shit. So Donna's tattoos are atrocious. Well, you know, Donna light skin, so she's automatically pretty.
Oh, okay.
For a certain sect of people. I don't mean for me. But I was
going to say, I thought that was going somewhere. I thought that was going to get some light skin hate. I was going to be hurt.
No, it's judgment on men. Who be like, oh, she light skin. Cool. It don't matter that she missing a tooth on the side. You know, like that.
They do love the red bones. But
you know, she light skin with a big booty. And, you know, that it seems to work for her. But them tattoos are a shit mess. Anywho, though, Becky and Amy had a match with Sarah Logan and Liv Morgan. Becky quickly won with a disarmer on Sarah. Liv tries to break up the submission, but Naomi knocks her out of the ring like a real one, and Logan taps. I don't know if you saw, but I did, that Naomi is apparently friends with Kairi Sane, and that makes me happy. I can imagine them on a glowing pirate ship. Bitchy glasses.
You talking about, who'd you say again?
Kairi, she's on NXT.
Oh, okay, yeah. I saw that picture. Okay.
It's very adorable.
I think everybody's friends with Naomi.
Because Naomi is everything. And she drinks. What?
Yes. And she's married to an Uso, so I'm sure they love that too.
So it's like she got the Samoan connection, the ethnic connection. She got the weave hookup, and it looks like Sasha's finally made friends with her. What? Yes, bless.
But real quick, though, shout out to Sarah Logansonville, Indiana. We got to show a little love to her. Why is that? Why? That's the hometown, girl.
You from Indiana?
I'm from Indiana.
Gary, Indiana?
No, no, no. I'm from Southern Indiana. Gary's up top. Gary's up top next to Chi-Town.
Yeah, no.
I'm sure.
I'm from Joliet.
Oh, no shit.
Well, my people are.
He's from the real Indiana, girl.
Every summer.
Yeah, I'm from the country part, right here by Louisville, Kentucky, where we race horses and all that.
Kentucky, that's real Southern.
Real Southern.
That's so funny. People up there sound so country, and you're like, why do you sound like you are straight out of a damn... Wait.
Because
they are. I was about to say plantation, but yeah, no.
I mean, it basically is. If you, I mean, you got to think, the biggest horse race in the world's 5 minutes away from me, so everybody's pretty Southern down here. They don't want to admit it. They want to try to say Midwest, but that's whatever.
They country, though. Because all them immigrated, you know, the Great Migration, when the ethnics went up and out.
It did.
But anyway, that's enough for your educational moment. They have a video for the Women's Battle Royal, which is now not about Moolah, instead just about the awesomeness of women in general. Cool. Backstage, a producer lets Daniel know that Owens and Sammy have arrived. He says he's going to meet them in the ring. He comes to the ring. Out come Cammy. They enter. They seem happy. They're happy to see Daniel.
Sammy said they weren't. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe
He is great as a heel. You are right. He is great.
He said they weren't going to be here until they heard the news Daniel was clear. He said they raced to the arena, but were late because they got pulled over by Walker's Texas Ranger for exceeding the speed limit by 10 to 15 miles per hour. He said they talked their way out of it because everything is dumber in Texas. Yeah. Well, Sammy said Daniel understood them and stuck up for them after everything that happened. He's so happy at the idea of Daniel returning to the ring. He don't care about Raw versus SmackDown, A show versus B, because any show with the three of them is a dream show, and they could be a dream team. Daniel Bryan is like, I'm not here for all that. And then they do the replay of what they did to Shane last week. They're happy. They're excited. They're proud of what they did. Owens is like, yeah, we got carried away a little bit. And Shane is like, he kind of deserved it. And Dan's like, nah, you don't understand. You're great. And Shane was right when he said he was living vicarious through them, but they assaulted their boss. You can't do that. And also, they were already winning. He said he was wrong. They had a match at WrestleMania. Like, he was like, can you imagine when they were playing bingo halls 10, 12 years ago, if somebody had told them they would have a WrestleMania match, if, you know, and they're like, they would have had Brian in the corner, in their corner with Shane leaving, because remember, Shane was like, I'm going to step down before he got his ass beat. He said, but now he has no choice. He said, you know, it's going to suck, but hey, I've been fired twice before by the WWE, and now you're fired. And he's like, doesn't mean you're gone forever, but you're gone. For now, you mean a lot to me. Ask for a handshake. The crowd is some assholes, so they sing the Na 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 song. Owens is like, they shake hands, but they don't mean it. And then Owens runs and knocks Daniel down. Sammy walks over to him, mounts him, punches him in the head some. Daniel knocks down Sammy, kicks away Kevin, but the numbers game catches up. Before it does, he does get some licks in with Sammy and a German snap German suplex and some running, a lot of running drop kicks. And the thing about the running drop kicks was the way he was like landing, it looked like he was about to break his neck. And it was like, ooh, you only been back for like 10 hours. Like, don't do all that. That's a whole lot. Like, he was falling on himself like Sasha likes to fall. Like, just like, I don't know. It just didn't look safe. But he's beating up Owens. Sammy makes the save. And then Sammy holds Daniel, and Owens gives him a super kick. Sammy gives him a haluva kick. Crowd's certainly not behind any of this. Then they yank Daniel out of the ring. Officials are pleading with him to stop. Kevin gives Brian a power bomb on the apron. It's so violent. And it's like, damn, only his first 2 hours back in the ring.
Taking major bumps.
So the crowd boos, and the crowd chants, you suck. And as Kevin and Sammy back off and the EMTs run down with the stretcher, the crowd chants, you're still fired. Which I actually did enjoy.
That was heavy, man.
That was a lie.
Yeah, it was almost like, oh man, I don't want to see him get beat. I thought when he started to take over and started to win that they were just going to like roll out the ring and let him have his moment. But no.
Not at all. Mm-mm. Plus also, did y'all see after all that what KO did on Twitter?
Yeah.
What did he do? I know he changed his name.
Yeah, changed his app name to Fight Scene Fight. Keep it in kayfabe at all times. I like it.
An icon. Yes. We live.
He's on top of his game. I like KO a lot.
Yeah, he's definitely the best heel. He pays attention to the most details.
Yes.
He's in his angles. So yeah, he's definitely all in whenever it comes to whatever he's got going on. So it's cool that he's playing it up that way. So what you think, DD? What you think about SmackDown? This is the best SmackDown. I mean, I know they probably got about 3 million people on this one.
We win. We always win. Raw sucks per use. Okay, let's see about these ratings because I know where to find information.
All right. Well, while you do that, while you look up the ratings.
Oh no, I found it.
Oh, you got them already.
She had them on deck.
She was doing
the Ronda Rousey drum roll right there.
Yo, it was like, damn, girl, do you have no sense of timing?
Not at all.
Like, you gotta wait for the drum roll to start.
And you know the great part about it is I love the editing package where they edited words into her. It's you. Like, no, guys, she didn't say it's you. She just said you.
You. So,
you. You.
Tell me who, Rhonda? You. Okay, girl.
You.
She's Lord. Awful. Anyway, 2.888 million viewers, which is a 4% increase over last week. And a 12% increase than 2 weeks ago. The only shows to beat this number were the Superstar Shakeup from last year and the very first Drive Special in 2016.
Mm. Yeah, they didn't quite get 3 million, but they got real close. 2.8.
It's real close. Fifth of the night on cable, first in the demo, because we only care about people 18 to 49, because they the ones that be buying shit. So, yeah. It's lit.
Yeah, so good job. Good job for SmackDown.
I mean, thank you.
You're welcome.
It's kind of what we do.
We know what we need people to do. We need people to support the WrestleCast and help keep the podcast free each and every week. And they can do that and also eat healthy and get some great meals by signing up for Blue Apron. If you sign up for Blue Apron through CSPN.us, you'll get $30 off your first order. They'll basically send you everything you need. All you have to do is follow the instructions, and 30 to 45 minutes later, you will have a freshly home-cooked meal on your table, and you will help keep the podcast free each and every week. So, Blue Apron through CSPN.us. Do it today. We'll get into some NXT. NXT starts out with DD's fave, Tommaso Ciampa.
Mm-hmm.
He comes out to start the show to a chorus of booze, just like last week. We get lots of "We want Johnny Chance," and Ciampa is unable to get a word out. We have the fans; they have a lot of these Johnny Gargano emoji signs that they're waving around. And Tommaso finally gets a word out, saying that Johnny is gone. That's all he really says, and then he rolls out of the ring. He goes around the crowd, around the barricade, and he starts staring down fans. He starts ripping down those little Johnny Gargano emoji signs. So he ripped one out of a fan's hands and balls it up. He walks up to a little girl, takes her sign, tears it up. He even gets in front of an old grandma, and they get into it, and she hits him with a thumbs down. So there's this one dude who's got this really huge Johnny Gargano emoji sign, and Ciampa rips that down and kind of turns his back to him. And when he rips the sign down, it's Johnny Gargano. Johnny Gargano jumps over the rail, and he starts beating down Tommaso Ciampa in the ring. Finally, security rushes out and pulls Gargano away. The crowd is chanting, "Let them fight." Johnny is relentless and trying his hardest to break free, but they finally escort Johnny Gargano out. He busted Tommaso Ciampa's shit. He got him in the mouth good with, like, the second punch. But, yeah, this was great. This was a fantastic opening. For, like, the last 2 weeks, they've had this thing where, you know, Ciampa comes out, they boo him, he, you know, mean mugs everybody, rips up a couple of signs, kind of walks out. So it was a great play up on the last 2 weeks. And then with it being Gargano behind there, it was like, oh man, it was on and popping. So really good start to NXT this week. Mackenzie, did you see that?
Yeah, I was really I thought he was going to go again. I was sitting there like, there's no way they're going to go 3 weeks in a row and him not say a single word. So it was good that he said about 6 words and then going through and messing with the fans. But my favorite part of it, other than Johnny with the lucha mask and tearing it off and whooping his ass, was when Granny, he ripped Granny's sign and Granny gave him the thumbs up at first and then hit him with the thumbs down. Granny sunned him so hard. And it was the funny, I busted out laughing. It was funny as hell. Granny had the best part in that whole spot. If y'all go back and check that out. It was funny as hell.
Yeah, nothing is nothing gets you, you know, more heat than, you know, messing with the grannies.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, I don't think that one in the red shirt you said was a young lady. I don't think that was a young lady. If so, that's a very old-looking young lady. But then, but I, yeah, I know exactly. Yeah, that was probably. I mean, it just so I don't just sometimes I don't understand how much better NXT does than the rest of the shows. I mean, I do because H, you know what I'm saying, Trips is running it, I guess, and he just has everything working right now. But just the start of that show just set the tone for the rest of it. It was pretty good. It was damn good, actually.
You know why it works? It's a couple of things. It's 1 hour, so it works that way. They don't have everybody on there every week. Everybody's talking about, oh, I want a champion that's going to be on the show every week. It burns them out if you're on every week. So you get a couple of weeks of your favorites, and then you get a couple of weeks where you don't see them. Then you get a couple of weeks That's of your true. Favorite, and then you get a couple more weeks where you don't see them. And then also, they have squash matches. So people get to win. You get to see them win and win and win and win and win and win and get better and get better and get better. And then by the time they're ready for a championship match, you're behind them because they won for like 2 or 3 months straight.
It's like the old classic back in the day, you know what I'm saying, OVW, Smoky Mountain Wrestling, our shows, building them up. Yeah, you're exactly right with that. Because I'm fiending right now for Velveteen. I ain't seen Velveteen in a couple weeks now, and I'm dope fiending like hell. Where's my Velveteen?
Right.
So, yeah, you're exactly right with that.
That's why it works. Charlie Caruso goes over the happenings of the Dusty Tag Team Classic so far. She notes that Tyler Bate got some bad news recently. They go to Kathy Kelly talking to Tyler, and he had recently had a meeting with the WWE medical staff. The medical staff advised him to stay off his leg for 2 weeks, and since Mustache Mountain's match would be tonight, they have to back out. After Tyler Bate went down, Roderick Strong took to Twitter to throw his name in the hat for the Dusty Classic. Regal agreed as long as he finds a tag team partner. We get Twitter barbs exchanged by Cassius Ohno and Adam Cole, which are shown on the screen. Earlier today, Adam Cole cuts an interview. The Undisputed Era runs down Roderick Strong for not being a tag team guy and saying that nobody would want to tag with him. So we get our Dusty Rhodes Classic quarterfinal match where we have Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan versus Roderick Strong and Pete Dunne. Burch puts Dunne into a crossface. Strong tries to make the save, but he gets placed in a single leg Boston Crab. Strong kicks his way free, which sends Oney Lorcan into Burt, breaking up the crossface. An uppercut by Burt is followed by an enziguri by Dunne, which is followed by an exploder by Danny Burch. A blind tag by Roderick Strong brings him in for an assisted backbreaker. Roderick hits the end of heartache to Burch, and Dunne and Roderick Strong get the win to advance in the Dusty Rhodes Classic. That's an interesting little tag team pairing, Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong.
It is. It's interesting but good. I didn't think that would, I mean, I guess when they played the angle up, it made sense when they did it, but also to me, I thought they did a very good job on that match in total.
Oh, yeah.
But Pete, the match was awesome to me, but, I don't know, Pete Dunne, he's an interesting character to me because he's one of those, I don't give a damn about you, you don't give a damn about me kind of guys. And in a quick minute, he could turn on Roderick if he really wanted to and still be a babyface, which is always fun to me because he, you know what I'm saying, he has the crowd's attention because of how they've built him up. So I'm a big fan of Mr. Dunne there, the old UK champion.
You kind of touched on what I was about to elaborate on. I see this pairing kind of being like Finn and Samoa Joe was in the very first Dusty Rhodes Classic. Okay. Like, you know, they won it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that led right into Finn and Samoa Joe having that great series of matches in NXT for the title. Mm-hmm. So maybe that could kind of be like what they're setting up here, because if you saw NXT a couple of weeks ago, Roderick Strong and Pete Dunne had a little thing out in the parking lot where he was kind of like, hey, you know, it was a good match. You got me that time, but I'll be back again. And, you know, Pete Dunne was like, yep, anytime, brother, I'm here. And then that's when Adam Cole rolled up and, you know, they kind of got into a little bit of spat. Yeah, they got into a little bit of spat, which I thought was going to lead to a three-way but doesn't look like that's going to happen. But yeah, so Pete Dunne, like you said, he still may, you know, in the end, turn on Roderick Strong, and we get a series of matches between those two guys. Didi, you should perk up for this. We get a Ricochet vignette.
Ooh.
The future flight is coming soon to NXT.
Is he Ricochet?
Yes, he is Ricochet.
Yeah.
Cool. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if they were going to make him like have a new name or something.
Nope. He's going to keep Ricochet.
Cool.
We get Aaliyah versus Ember Moon in a non-title match. Ember hits a Samoan drop. She hits the front flip forearm in the corner and then the Eclipse, and Ember gets the win. Shayna Baszler was on commentary, and after the match, her and Ember, you know, jaw back and forth. Ember's in the ring, and Shayna's standing on top of the commentary desk, and they're going back and forth yelling at each other. So, another little chapter and their little feud. So, you know,
Ember also skipped the PG portion on the ropes. If you caught that one, I'm still the champ, bitch. Oh,
no, I missed that part.
Yeah, that was good. I was like, oh my god, y'all just, it's Roman Mania. Everybody just on the Brock Lesnar train of we don't care about your PG rating, Vince.
Yeah, the guy who works the bleep button on Raw doesn't do anything all year except for when Brock Lesnar shows up.
I feel sorry for him when Brock shows up, because Brock, oh my god, he's so unpredictable. And then it kind of gets everyone else feeling kind of froggy, because like, you're gonna let him do it, you're gonna let us do it, and then everybody starts doing. That's kind of the same thing when, like I said, when Angle walked out right before Brock came out, he said, "Fuck this shit, I'm done." Like, everybody's like, "Hold on, this is PG-13, y'all. Y'all need to quit that. We can read lips, you know, right?"
Raul Mendez comes out for his singles match, and then Andre Cien Almas jumps him and throws him off the side of the stage. Cien Almas and Zelina Vega, they storm to the ring. Almas is not happy with Aleister Black for what he pulled on Zelina last week, and since Black didn't respect him or Zelina, he calls him out. Almas also calls him a piece of shit, and he dares Aleister to face him next week to pay for his disrespect. So, Cien Almas sticking up for his woman. Backstage, William Regal plugs the main event. He says he's finalizing details, but he will make an announcement next week that will change the landscape of NXT forever. Got a speculation on what that might be there, McKenzie?
I don't, because I want to say they're adding additional, I mean, I'm additional title maybe. I don't know if they've already made the announcement on NXT. I mean, I missed it for the North American title deal, which I'm sure they already have, but nope. Yeah, other than that, no, they haven't spoken on that on NXT yet?
That's probably what it's going to be, because that has not come out in the television yet, so you may be a little bit ahead of the television if you have that information. But yeah, they've been kicking around adding some more belts in all of the different divisions. So NXT as well has been thinking about getting a secondary men's title. And to go, since the UK title is kind of in NXT now by default with Pete Dunne showing up there more, they're thinking about making a North American title. So.
Which is good for business. They need, like you be trying to fit all those belts in an hour show, but you can switch them week by week, always have something interesting going. So just don't do too many for the NXT, hopefully.
Right. Main event time, Adam Cole versus Cassius Ohno. Ohno counters the Shining Wizard and turns it into a powerbomb, gun stun type move. Ohno adds a forearm and hits a running elbow that sends Cole to the outside. Inside, Cole gets a crucifix for a two count and delivers two super kicks. Cole adds a third super kick and another, the last shot. The Shining Wizard to the back of the head connects, and Adam Cole, baby, is your winner over Cassius Ohno. Now, I didn't think Cassius Ohno's wrestling gear could get any worse when he was doing the like knockoffs of like the sports teams, but this new gear is awful. He looks like the third member of Heavy Machinery.
Yeah, I mean, he should might as well add to them. It was a lightweight nightgown he had on tonight.
It was bad. Oh my god,
it was terrible. He had the Iverson shooting sleeve with a half nightgown and some wrestling trunks. Like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, he needs to go back to the fake teams, the Sacramento Kings and Duke gear he was wearing there a few months back, because that was bad.
That's right. By the way, March Madness, shout out to the Duke Blue Devils. Let's go.
Oh, man.
Oh, you're from Carolina. Don't say you're a Carolina fan. Don't do it.
Of course, Mackenzie. Gosh, there's only one team here, man. Jeez.
No, man. It's the Durham. Oh, man. All right. We'll move on from here.
So, another good episode of NXT. I really liked the seeing Almas jumping my man and then coming out there calling Aleister Black out, not letting what happened last week go without a response. Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan versus Pete Dunne and Roderick Strong was a really good tag team match. Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan, man, they, for two guys who are like, basically, they're high-level jobbers. They're not quite mid-card guys yet, but, man, they could really win a couple of matches.
They can wrestle.
Yeah, if they got booked to win a few matches, they could really be something.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I'm trying to think. Honestly, that's probably the best match over the last month in NXT, honestly.
Yeah, on television. On television wise,
definitely.
Yeah, yeah. Velveteen Dream and Tyler Bate was pretty good a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you saw that one or not.
Yeah, I did. I'm a big Velveteen fan. I always watch all his matches, but I would put that one over that one, just because of the tag team aspect of it. And that Velveteen and Tyler was good though. I need Velveteen next week. I'm getting a little Velveteen withdrawal.
All right, we're gonna go to 205 really quick. Hideo Itami versus Lince Dorado. Basically, this match ended in a DQ because they continued the, you know, Hideo Itami's out here, he wants respect, and he got into it with Grand Metalik, and Grand Metalik pushed him into the ring apron, and that caused a DQ, and then everybody argued after the match. We got a Drew Gulak promo video, and then we get a sit-down promo from Cedric Alexander. He's talking about earning his spot at WrestleMania. He achieved one dream of making it there, but it means nothing unless he wins the Cruiserweight title. We get a quick squash match between TJP and Kenneth Johnson. TJP gets the win with the knee bar. Then we get a Mustafa Ali video package. Drake Maverick is pissed about the finish of the opening match. So Maverick books Tozawa and Kalisto because they were the peacemakers. TJP and Buddy Murphy for next week in a Fatal 4-Way, noting that the winner will be the new challenger for the champion to be crowned at WrestleMania. Then we get our main event, the final semifinal match in a Cruiserweight tournament. We have Mustafa Ali versus Drew Gulak. Gulak tosses Ali over the barricade and into the timekeeper's area. The ref begins to count Ali out. Ali crawls and barely makes it back in. Gulak looks to finish it, but Ali makes the ropes as Gulak looks for a dragon sleeper. Ali counters and hits a tornado DDT. Ali then heads up top, and he hits the imploding 450 splash and gets the win over Drew Gulak. After the match, Ali is interviewed, and he says, "We are going to WrestleMania," and he's fought his whole life to prove himself. Another good match between Mustafa Ali and Drew Gulak. Basically, a continuation of, you know, the no-fly zone things that they started earlier last year that they carried mostly through first reincarnation of 205 Live. So, you know, it was only fitting that Drew Gulak in this more serious role got a chance to wrestle Mustafa Ali in such a high-stakes match. And it was another good match. They have really good chemistry together.
Yeah, it definitely was. I don't know, Drew, I feel kind of bad for him. I feel like he was getting the serious role is good for him, but I feel like he was getting or having a little more fun when he had Enzo with him, or when he was tagging along with Enzo. But Drew can wrestle. He definitely right. can. And with the whole no fly zone and going against the grain in 205 Live, he's carved his little niche, and you know what I'm saying, he does what he does.
So at WrestleMania, it will be Cedric Alexander versus Mustafa Ali for the Cruiserweight title. So basically, the two guys who were having the best matches on 205 Live when Enzo was a champion are going to get a chance to decide the championship amongst themselves. And if they get the, even if it's the pre-show or the opening match, they should get 15 to 12 minutes to go out there and have a really good match. And I can't wait, because I know that they got something up their sleeve.
Oh, yeah. I feel like it should be the opening match. The opening match. And I think they should give them 20, because I think they could start the night off really right for WrestleMania as far as the full pay-per-view goes, because that's a lot of action in one match.
All right. So now everybody's caught up on all things WWE for this week. Didi Jonet, let me get you back in really quick. Since it was a snow day, did you get a chance to watch any of the TNA, or were you too busy and too scandal into How to Get Away with Murder tonight?
Today is Wednesday.
Oh, today is Wednesday. Oh, I forgot we're recording a day early.
What have you been drinking?
I'm off. I'm off the schedule. I'm used to talking to you on Thursdays. I'm just off my schedule.
That's so funny. Yeah, no. And I didn't think to look and see if there was like spoilers or anything. So,
right.
No updates.
Okay. Well, speaking of TNA, I would just advise everybody to listen to the Chris Jericho podcast from last Friday, where Sami Callihan was his guest. And basically, he was going over the incident with Eddie Edwards and the response to it from everybody in wrestling and basically how he's dealing with it. And if you're a fan of the heel life, you'll definitely be a fan of Sami Callihan.
Is that the chair and baseball bat situation? That's not the same one, is it?
Yes, sir.
Oh, that is the same one.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, I gotta watch that one, though.
Yeah, if you guys don't know, Sami Callihan and Eddie Edwards were wrestling in TNA. This was the week, a couple of weeks ago, I asked Dee Dee if she was watching, and she was out on the town this particular night, so she did not see it. But, yeah, they went to do a spot where he was supposed to hit the chair was on Eddie Edwards' chest. And the spot was, he was supposed to hit the chair, which I guess was supposed to like compress into his chest. Well, he missed the end of the chair and the baseball bat hit Eddie Edwards squaw in the face and the eye socket, broke his over the bone, almost like cost the man his eye and his eyesight. And basically Sami Callihan says that he apologized to him. He felt bad, you know, at the time. But, you know, okay, what's done is done, and he's living his life, and everybody else is out here talking about how bad he should feel, and he's not showing enough remorse, and blah, 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 blah. And Sami Callihan's basically, you know, throwing his two middle fingers up and said, you know, yeah, I did it. It happens. Mistakes happen, but y'all need to get over it. So, very interesting interview.
That's the way life's got to be right there, though.
Yeah, yeah. It's a really interesting look into him, because he talks about, you know, being in NXT and the trials and tribulations of, you know, dealing with WWE and their system and you know, how he had things that he was trying to push and get over that, you know, they wouldn't use it for him, but then they would use it for other people and, you know, just kind of that rut that he was in there. So it's really in-depth. It's not just all about the incident with Eddie Edwards, but that is a lot of it because, I mean, he's basically the most talked about man in wrestling right now, for better or worse, so.
Yeah, for that, because the only reason I had saw that is because I follow, obviously from being where I'm from, I follow Jim Cornette on Twitter. And of course, Jim always, you know what I'm saying, goes in on whoever, you fucking idiot, this and that. And like, I watched the video, I was like, oh God, that had to hurt. And he ended up with, what, a broken orbital bone and all that?
Oh yeah. Yeah, man, it's real bad. Like he almost lost his eye in the incident. It was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Sometimes you got to pay the cost to be the boss, right? Right.
As Stone Cold once famously said, this ain't ballet, son.
Exactly. Oh, man.
So this time, we'll open it up to Mackenzie for his shout-outs and final thoughts.
Shout-out, first and foremost, Jay to the Max. Without her, I wouldn't even know who you guys were. She turned me on to the WrestleCast podcast, so... Always much love to Jade. She's a Chicagoan. I think she's moved up to the West Coast too. So, other than that, man, just appreciate you guys having me on. Hopefully, we get to do this again soon, sometime or anytime in the future. And it's been good and fun.
All right.
And as always, we all dislike AWOL Orton.
Miss Didi Jonet, your thank yous and shout outs.
Shout out to Mackenzie. Shout out to you, Sam. Greg, the chairman, Mel, because Mel always gets shout outs. Shout out to what? No, that's it. I can't think of nothing else.
All right. Short and sweet this week.
Yeah, real basic.
I like to give
a positive kind of basic.
I'd like to give a shout out to our guest, Mackenzie, for joining us tonight. I'd like to give a shout out to our SmackDown Matters correspondent, Miss Didi Jonet. Give a shout out to the chairman for putting together the parting promo at the end of the show. I'd like to give a shout out to Greg and Sam. Give a shout out to Mel, because Mel always gets shout outs. Give a shout out to everybody here on the CSPN. Please check out all our great podcasts. Again, support our sponsors. Go to our website, cspn.us. Click on the banner that says Keep Our Podcast Free. Click on Blue Apron or many of our sponsors. Any of our sponsors will do. to help keep the podcast free each and every week. Thank you to everybody who showed up in the Rawcast and SmackDown Matters this week. Shout out to The Glow. We couldn't do it without you. Shout out to Jay to the Max as well. And on that note, be on the lookout for new cast of Strong Style episode with guest host Anwar Starwin. And the finals of the New Japan Cup happened on this week, as well as they're coming back to Long Beach on Sunday. I think it is the 25th. New Japan is going to have their live event from Long Beach. Strong Style Evolved is going to be on Access TV. So you guys who have Access TV, tune in. It will be carried live on Access. We will be live tweeting using the hashtag #CastOfStrongStyle. So if you're into New Japan or you want to know what all the big fuss is about, tune in to Access on Sunday, the 25th, and check out Strong Style Evolved. So on that note, for our SmackDown Matters correspondent, Ms. Didi Jonet, for our special guest, Mr. McKenzie, I'm Don DeLorente. This has been episode 177 of the WrestleCast. Please stay tuned for the parting promo.
A little over 2 years ago, when I was forced to retire, it was one of the hardest days of my life. But I focused on one thing, on being grateful. And I kept on focusing on trying to be grateful. So there were times when I was depressed about not being able to do what I love to do, and I focused on being grateful. And there were times that I was angry and I was mad that I couldn't do what I love to do, and I focused on being grateful. And I have a lot to be grateful for. I have amazing family. I have amazing friends. I have the best fans in the world. And I also have an amazing, beautiful wife. And when I was depressed, and when I was angry, and I was trying to be grateful, and she saw that all I wanted to do was get back in the ring, she came to me and she said, "It's wonderful that you're grateful, but you need to fight, and you need to fight for your dreams." And over the last 2 months, I've asked WWE to relook at my case. And they sent me to the best neurologist all over the country. And all of these neurologists, every specialist, every doctor I've seen has said the same thing, and it is this: you are cleared. So I've got a lot of thank yous to say right now. First of all, I want to say thank you to the WWE and their doctors. Because first and foremost, they looked at me as the person and not me as the wrestler. And for that, I will be forever grateful for them. I also am grateful that they were willing to give my case a second look. For me to be out here to be able to say to you guys that yes, I am cleared. I want to say thank you to every single person here, to every single person watching at home, because you guys have supported me for this entire time. And lastly, but not leastly, I would like to say thank you to Brie. I don't think any of you truly understand how much she supported me over the last 2 years. And for that, I am incredibly grateful. So Now, on to the fun stuff, right? I don't know exactly when or where I will get back in this ring. Does that sound like a good idea? I don't know for sure if that's gonna happen, but will Daniel Bryan compete in a WWE ring again?